Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs. Ben Flanagan of AL.com. Ben Stark of Wondermill Films.
Ben, how you doing?
Great. What's up?
Well, it's summer, kind of, feels like it, and there's an Avengers movie in the theater that we've been discussing. So I guess the summer movie season has begun, and we're kind of behind the ball, really, if we want to preview it, since it already has begun, but that won't stop us, right?
Do you consider Infinity War a summer movie? I mean, it's like, on paper, the summer movie, but it came out in April.
I guess. I mean, if it's in the theater during the summer, doesn't that make it a summer movie? By that
count, Black
Panther
is still in a lot
of
theaters.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So,
hey, I might go see that again. That may be a summer movie, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Well, I guess so. Just, you know, we've talked about before. Fast and the Furious movies come out in April, and they sort of, you know, they're borderline, but they feel like summer movies. I mean, Captain America movies have come out in April, so it just seems like they're turning April into a summer movie month. Maybe they already have.
Yeah, I mean, the whole year is really. Tyler Smith and I did that podcast a few years ago about the end of the summer movie season and the fact that we get massive releases in February and March and November and December. I think, for me, the delineation point that we kind of discussed was Force Awakens in 2015, you know, and that you kind of, if Star Wars and Jaws kicked off the summer movie season, then, in my opinion, Jurassic World, which kind of deconstructs the Jaws Jurassic Park, formula, and then The Force Awakens coming out in at Christmas, I think that kind of ends it. I think now we're just talking about, you know, it's like all year long is the tentpole movie season. But that's a different topic. I like to pretend that nothing ever changes and that movies are still like they were when I was a kid, which was, you know, the throes of the summer movie season. So I'm going to keep talking about it in those terms.
Okay.
You wanted a short answer.
I'm satisfied.
So, good. Well, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that we're breaking from tradition a little bit. Usually me and Franco do these summer movie previews. He just had a baby, so he couldn't make this call. So if not Infinity War, what does kick off this summer?
Well, I mean, this is technically – so when's Memorial Day? You know? I mean, when we talk about
like
summer –
Yeah, it's usually like a third weekend. I think
yeah,
it may be maybe
guess,
Solo. The weekend Solo comes out.
Yeah, okay. I guess the first week of May, it kind of turned into the first week of summer. But, I mean, this weekend, nothing wanted to even, like, come close to following Avengers Infinity War, like, from the studios. All they have to offer is the Jason Reitman sort of parenthood dramedy Tully, and
yeah,
then this Overboard remake, which is like, what? But... I mean, I guess Infinity War did kind of officially kick things off because they were like people. I mean, even next week too, they want no part
of
it.
They cleared the deck. Yeah, people are diving out of the way to avoid that. And honestly, I mean, look, if it's not your thing, go see Tully, because it is excellent counter-programming to Infinity War. You can hardly get further away from that than a intimate drama about parents.
Yeah. I can't wait. I haven't seen it. I know you have.
So that's the true summer opener is what I'm saying.
Okay.
Tully.
Congratulations to Jason Reitman.
Yeah, top three worldwide box office by the end of the year. I'm calling it now.
Okay, and so that's that weekend. You've seen that. You recommend it. So yes. Next weekend, there are a few movies that are just, you know, they're gonna just fly under the radar. James McTeague, he's the guy who did V for Vendetta, right?
Yes, and I think Ninja Assassin. Creed. Ninja Assassin.
And not Assassins, that was Richard Donner.
No, true.
He's got a movie called Breaking In with Gabrielle Union.
All right.
I guess it's a domestic thriller, I assume.
Yeah.
Then there's the Melissa McCarthy comedy Life of the Party, which, you know.
Is that like old school with ladies?
Yeah, it's about a recently single mother who decides to go back to college and ends up in the same class as her daughter. What could go wrong? Julian Jacobs from Community is in it.
I think both of those have the chance to make some sleeper money, I think.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe. And then
I feel like those are reliable titles that they should make an okay amount of money unless they're just like god awful.
Well, then there's that crime thriller Terminal, the Margot Robbie sort of like film noir movie. I don't know if that's going wide, but I know that there is some anticipation for that. Simon Pegg is in it. Mike Myers is in it.
I've never heard of this.
Yeah, it looks interesting. I think it's a passion project from Margot Robbie, and she's, I think, a producer on it too, but she stars as sort of a femme fatale character. And it's just kind of, I guess, in the vein of like old Guy Ritchie movies, but more of a noir twist on it. So it looks kind of interesting, very stylish.
Who's directing it?
It's a guy named Vaughn Stein, I think, is the writer-director. I've never heard of him.
Okay.
All right, and then the next week, people start losing. I guess the summer movie season kicks back in because Deadpool 2 opens on May 18th.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah.
But even that is a counterintuitive pick, because I assume it was going to be a rated R movie.
Yeah, but it didn't really stop.
No, it didn't stop. No, it'll still make tons of money.
Did you like the first Deadpool?
It was okay. I thought the action was really good, but then all the meta stuff just makes me want to leave the room. Trailer for this looked...
So I guess you didn't like it then.
Well, no, I mean, I don't know. The trailer for this, again, looks pretty cool, and then he starts talking about DC movies, and it's like, dude, stop it.
I know it's the character and everything, and I don't want this to turn into a Deadpool discussion, but... I kind of agree with you. I mean, some of it can just be kind of funny and on the nose, and just like there's some fun surface level jokes, you know. And Ryan Reynolds has obviously got great comic timing. He's a really entertaining person, but it's just so insecure, don't you think? Like
so insecure. Yeah, that's a great word for it.
Yeah, we use the term Twitter the movie all the time to describe certain things. I mean, Deadpool falls squarely into that category.
Well,
it's like
what culture YouTube video, the movie. You know?
But it's just like it covers its base. It's like you can't make fun of me because I'm covering all my bases, you know? I'm being as meta as I can so that whatever you say, I've already said. It's kind of like Eminem and 8 Mile when he like trashes himself during that freestyle verse so that his opponent can't say anything about him, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think this is really more of an 8 Mile remake.
That's also how I approach arguments with my wife. the comic character wasn't always like that. He became like a very snarky, he was like Spider-Man, a very violent version of Spider-Man, you know, that was like, you know, cracking jokes and had to be self-deprecating because he was dying, and he had a very dark sense of humor because he was at his core just a terminally ill character. And then it turned into, once the 2000s hit, it turned into this kind of brand thing where Deadpool kind of It just kind of the cart went before the horse, and it just became this monster. And that's kind of when I checked out. And the movie
he's like Reddit man.
Exactly.
All right, so Deadpool 2 will probably make a lot of money. Yeah, I assume it'll probably become the number one movie that weekend and edge out Infinity War, which is interesting. You know, that'll mean Infinity War will only have been the number one movie for 3 straight weeks. Do you think Deadpool will unseat it?
Yeah, probably. I think I think Infinity War, hasn't it already dropped not a considerable amount, but I feel like it's not sustaining like the way that it may have, or maybe I misinterpreted something. I don't know. Yeah, I don't think so. I think that it's hard, unless it's a Black Panther kind of thing where it's like so different, you know, and it's like you're tapping into an audience that just doesn't get to watch movies very often. I feel like that's the only way that you're really going to sustain the kind of power that's going to plow through a Deadpool 2. But no, I agree. I think Deadpool 2, I don't think it may not be a huge weekend. It may be the biggest R-rated weekend or something like that of all time, but I definitely think it'll overtake Infinity War.
Infinity War, as of right now, less than a week, or about a week being open, has made $857 million worldwide.
And you're impressed by that?
I mean,
that's ridiculous. Maybe I'm wrong, yeah. I mean, look, you're asking me. I hope that Infinity War barrels straight through Deadpool and the solo movie, because I don't want more movies like either of those. But those movies may be better than Infinity War, so I'm willing to eat those words. But at this point, as a fanboy, I mean, there's not a film franchise that I'm going to be rooting on more than probably the Marvel Cinematic Universe. But I just don't think that's going
to
happen.
Well, as a fanboy, are you at least a bit curious to see how they realize Cable on the big screen?
No, I don't. No,
no.
I'm not really crazy about this. And he's just the straight man for Deadpool, and that's not the Cable that I was interested in when I was a kid. I was interested in the Terminator ripoff that Cable was, you know, in the early 90s. And I'm not crazy about the Richard Spencer haircut that they gave him. And I feel like the Brolin performance just kind of, I feel like it kind of waters down the strength of Thanos's performance, at least in the culture, you know, because there's even a thing where in the trailers, like, calls him Thanos.
Yeah.
And then I kick my dog, that part,
of course he does,
where that happens.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Okay. So before we move on, I think, you know, it's only right to talk a little big picture in terms of what this summer looks like, especially starting with Deadpool 2, because I'm not crazy about this summer. Just like looking at the calendar, there's just not a lot that's getting me out of my seat when it comes to like the big tentpole releases. For one, pretty much all of them are sequels, like all of them. And that's not new. Obviously this has been commonplace for a long time. The 80s sequels flourished and on into the 90s and up to now. I mean, this is normal, but you know, when there's a sequel to Sicario is one of the big tentpole releases. It's like, well, never in my wildest dreams did I think Sicario was going to get a sequel, let alone be a tentpole release
as a
result of it. You know, and it's weird because, you know, looking back, you think like, wow, well, if this gets a sequel, then why can't a movie like Before Sunrise get a sequel, right? And then we got two of those, you know, and it's just like, okay, well, that's kind of cool that they can have sequels too, and then they can make them good. So, you know, for the Sicario fans out there, maybe this is really exciting, and it does look kind of fun. I know it's not the same director, which, you know, and I don't think Roger Deakins is shooting it, but they're doing their best to make a carbon copy, and they certainly got the most interesting, you know, people from that movie to be in it. So, you know, maybe they're on the right track. But anyway, it speaks to the rest of the summer, because we're talking about movies, like, again, multiple sequels. I mean, we'll get to Mission Impossible, but what is that, like the sixth Mission Impossible movie now? You've got the fourth Oceans movie. I mean, the list goes on. So
Pixar.
I guess we should just go through the calendar. But, I mean, just, again, on paper, there are like two movies that I'm really excited about this summer. Beyond that, I'm just like, okay, I mean, if I still have Movie Pass, then I'll probably see most of these.
I've got a handful that I'm pretty excited about, but Infinity War was kind of the big one, so I feel like that's out of the way. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of sequels, and you kind of wish for, like, why won't they gamble on something like the way they gambled on The Matrix, you know, or other movies that became a huge deal because they were released in the summer, because it's an original idea that got treated like a sequel, with the marketing push and the budget, and then it performed like it was a sequel. It's weird. It's almost like audiences, if the studio treats a property like it's important, the audience usually responds, and it has nothing to do with if there's a two in the name or not, or if there's a recognizable entity or not. But, you know, whatever. But again, other conversation probably.
Yeah. Should we move on?
Sure.
Okay, that same weekend, the counter programming for Deadpool is this movie called Book Club, which is an all-female cast comedy with Diane Keaton, Jane Fonda, Candice Bergen, and Mary Steenburgen. So, you know, we'll see how that does. And then there's there's this Show Dogs movie with Will Arnett. It's like the Nine Lives of 2018.
Yeah.
Where, oh, God. Okay, here's the log line. If talking animals are your thing, let's start.
That's the tagline?
You'll want to check out this family comedy, which stars Will Arnett as a detective and Ludacris as the voice of his canine partner as the pair go undercover to solve a case at a prestigious dog show. Are you in or what?
Is this the one directed by Steve McQueen? It's Lars von Trier. Never mind. I was looking at the wrong info.
Dear God.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Then there's a Saoirse Ronan movie that won't play anywhere but New York and L.A. called On Chisel Beach. But the next week, here we go, Solo, Star Wars Story. How are you feeling about it today?
I feel like this is like this movie kind of like tracks the emotional arc of Film Nerds Unlimited in a way, because I feel like we keep coming back to talk about it, because it there's so much of our popular topics are wrapped up in this movie. You know, you've got the ongoing brand thing, and then the recasting thing, and the rebooting thing, and continuity, and all these other things. So yeah, it's fun to check in with it every now and then and see where we're at on it. Today, I think it looks like a completely serviceable, fun summer movie. I don't think it necessarily looks great. I think the cinematography looks a little muddy, but, you know, I get to see Chewbacca having adventures and Lando and yes, Han Solo. And I don't really know what the story is, so that's interesting that, you know, I don't know where it'll go other than presumably Han Solo and Chewbacca won't die before the end of the movie. So yeah, I'm fine with it. I've made peace with it, and I don't know if I'll see it opening weekend. I was talking to my wife the other day. I was like, I mean, we don't have to see that if it's not, like, you know, because we're expecting a baby, so it's like we're choosing our time kind of wise. And she was like, yeah, we're gonna see that. What are you talking about? And I was like, oh, okay. So I think most of the rest of the world is like pretty on board with this, and that's fine.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I mean, just to see the trailer sizzle reel, because it doesn't really let you in on any story, like you said. I mean, with Rogue One, at least we kind of knew the basic premise, you know, like this is about a team that are it's basically a heist movie to get the Empire plans to build the Death Star, right? Like, we knew that going in. This time, all we know is young Han Solo. That's it. And we see little blips of, you know, Woody Harrelson recruiting him for a job. You know, does that mean? I don't know what that means, to be honest with you, but I agree. I think it looks kind of cool. Like, I mean, just the imagery of it. I guess the same way I felt about Rogue One. I thought it, you know, there are bits and pieces of it that they look kind of cool. I mean, but I, you know, based on Rogue One, I have no idea what movie we're going to get. Like Rogue One, it changed directors.
Yep.
I don't know, but to be honest with you, I do think I think you're right. The cinematography, I think, at the very least, is very interesting. I think it looks like one of Ron Howard's better-looking movies, though it's weird that every scene seems to take place during dawn or dusk.
Maybe it's a lot of gray tones, or not gray tones, but gray, not color-wise, but, like, darkness-wise. You know,
maybe it has something to do with the planet they're on, you know, like there are two suns, I don't know, maybe there's dying, I don't know, who knows.
There's an awesome shot in the trailer that's straight out of a Sergio Leone movie, you know, where it's like a deep focus shot on the bad guys and then a near focus shot on his holster with the blaster in it. And it's like, okay, they're making a Western, which everybody makes, you know, that's kind of the cliche.
It's Western. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's cool. So maybe it's like dusty, like you said, and it's like,
I think it looks pretty cool, but I'm kidding myself if I don't think there are just some warning signs, even in the trailers, and I think it starts with the lead actor, who we both really liked a lot in Hail Caesar, like everybody, and, you know, if somebody was going to take on this gargantuan role, then I was comfortable with him based on his most recent work, but something looks a little off in the trailers with him in how little they're showing of him and what we know about the character, obviously, and what Harrison Ford did with him. And, you know, we can go on and on for days about how difficult of a role that is to recast, and we have, but I don't know. We heard the stories about having to hire an acting coach, an anonymous actor saying that, you know, he wasn't good or he wasn't up for the task. So, that seems to be reflected in what we've seen so far in the trailers, but I think the guy is obviously very talented, and I'm going to give him a shot.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that. That's interesting. That sounds suspicious, because he's been in plenty of other movies. You know, it's not like this is like a model or somebody that they, or a pro wrestler that they cast. But,
what I heard, just to briefly get into it, the story was an actor from Solo spoke, I forget to which outlet, but they sort of shot on the experience, and they said that the actor was enough of a name, I guess, to be called back for the reshoots, right? Like, they were important enough to, like, be, they didn't really kind of give you any more clues beyond that, but they said that Alden Ehrenreich apparently was asked and was given like the directive to be Harrison Ford, like do an imitation of Harrison Ford. And that came from the top. Like, you basically, like, you have to be Harrison Ford as Han Solo. And so that put a lot of pressure on him, and apparently it wasn't going great. That's why they hired the acting coach to come in and help, and then the actor said in the end it just didn't work. So
That poor guy. Like, that is...
No.
That's Roman Reigns booking right there. I mean, that makes me want to root for it, honestly. And I was listening to the Slash Film Cast. They do, like, a summer movie wager thing every year, and the editor of Slash Film, Peter Serretta, said he had, like, industry sources that had seen test screenings, and all of them said it was a really good movie.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where it's like, I know Rogue One is a good movie. I have issues with it that just really drag it down that nobody else has, and that's fine. So, by that count, I mean, Lucasfilm, they don't make bad movies. They've made more good movies than Lucas did with the prequels, you know, in terms of, like, cultural acceptance and money and everything else. So I think that Kathleen Kennedy is a good enough producer that she's not going to let a trash movie, you know, hit theaters with her brand on it. So, which, you know, causes all sorts of other issues, you know, in terms of reshoots and firing directors and actor directives and stuff. But,
yeah.
And she's very protective of the fan base and the Star Wars brand. So, yeah, I don't think that we're going to go to the theater and see, like, a, you know, Gods of Egypt level, like, debacle. I just think that it has the potential to be just kind of flat and uninspiring.
There's just so much wonky about it, you know, that's been recorded down to the rip-off character posters that they had.
Oh, right, yeah.
it's just like, why is it just screwing up at every turn, you know? But here's the thing, like, I want to root for Ron Howard, you know? Like, I'm just such a big fan of his. Like, I think he's just, he's had such a great career. He's made so many fun, good, just solid studio movies. And who better than to just, like, step in, take over than a veteran director, like, and an extremely likable veteran director like him, who, you know, apparently had always wanted to make a Star Wars movie. So I'm all for Ron Howard riding the ship and making a good space western.
From the director of the Da Vinci trilogy.
Hey, man. And
trilogy.
And the, what was the Vince Vaughn movie he made? Like, the romantic, oh, like, I've already forgotten the name of it.
The Dilemma?
Yeah, I saw that at the theater, man. With my dad, you know, who likes Ron Howard. So, look, I'll never forget Apollo 13 and Backdraft and
oh,
Willow,
yeah.
and
oh, even, I mean, he Rush, you know, was a really good recent Ron Howard movie. So yeah, he's a fantastic director. So I'm not
Ransom?
Saying, huh?
Ransom.
Ransom, yeah, Ransom's good.
Hell yeah,
the
man.
Missing. The
no.
Missing.
No.
I haven't seen it. Anyway. So that's May, right? Or is there anything else that weekend that's going to...
The only other thing flush. That weekend is apparently this historical fiction biopic, Mary Shelley, starring Elle Fanning.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, June 1st, there's the Bad Grandpa Jackass spinoff, Action Point. Johnny Knoxville. So, you know... I got a soft spot in my heart for the Jackass brand, but not so much the Bad Grandpa
Jackass brand.
I love it, dude.
The Jackass brand. That's great. I just love the idea of some executives sipping bottled water in a boardroom saying, hey, we got to capitalize on the synergy of this Jackass brand.
Oh, well, hey, it was from that plucky company called MTV, you know?
Right. Yeah, that little underdog indie,
right.
Indie darling. This looks, I mean, look, I laugh harder than anyone else at people getting hurt and doing crazy stunts. Just give me that. You know, I appreciate the Jackass movies. I don't need them to come at me with this story. That said, actually I have a coworker that grew up in the area of, I think New Jersey where a theme park like that was operated, which it may actually be the theme park that Action Point is based on, where it's just like everything is extremely dangerous. And there's like this TV spot that he's shown us online where it was just like it was a commercial from the 70s, and it was like all the rides look so dangerous. So I think that is a decent story to tell. I just don't think you can really, I don't know, I just don't need a narrative around a Jackass stunt, and I don't need real Jackass stunts in the narrative, so it's like, stop trying to mix these things.
Yeah, I get kind of a Kenny Rogers, Burt Reynolds vibe from it, you know, like, which is kind of nice in a weird way, but
yeah,
I just wish these guys would make Jackass 4, you know, like, do what you're good at, you know, like, that's what people want.
I kind of want that, but then I also think about, like, these guys are pushing 50. And
oh, man, like,
and
yeah,
like,
every time I think Johnny Knoxville's gonna die in those movies, but,
yeah.
I mean... Hey, man, that's the life you choose.
And I haven't seen Bad Grandpa, but from the trailer for this, that kid that they get, it looks like the most obnoxious person ever. He looks like he would have been the bully in Heavyweights or something, you know, in like a camp movie from 1994.
Yeah. All right. Well.
Sorry, kid.
Other than that,
sorry,
we
just shot on the kid from Action Point.
Yeah, this movie is like, or this weekend is like empty September weekend adjacent, as a wrestling podcaster would say.
Right.
Because there's like a Shailene Woodley, like, romantic drama that I don't know who will see. There's another, like, crime movie, and then there's this Lee Whannell sci-fi thriller called Upgrade. So, I don't know. I think we need
to move on. What? Here's an interesting conversation. Are we our own worst enemies here in dismissing all of these non-Star Wars, non-Marvel movies? you know, as like, shouldn't we be championing Upgrade as maybe, oh wow, this could be the next Matrix. It's an original sci-fi movie by an established director.
Well, how established, though? You know, he is established by the word.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, well, that's fine, and I think he's done some fine work. You know,
like
I think
the Wachowskis weren't, you know, like, hugely
Bound
established.
Bound, though.
Right, but, I mean, Lee Whannell did half did Saw, which was made more money and more had more cultural impact.
I think Saw's pretty good, and I wish him luck. I can't say that based on what he's done since Saw, which was, what, in, like, 2006?
I have no clue.
That I've been very excited about his work, but you're right. It's an original movie coming out this summer, and, you know, I'll watch the trailer, and if it looks interesting, I'll give it a shot. But the next week, on June 8th, is an interesting week because we have Ocean's 8, this spinoff, obviously, of the Soderbergh trilogy. And then you also have the documentary, Won't You Be My Neighbor, about Mr. Rogers. It looks fantastic. Like that drew a lot of buzz like the day it came out, like on Twitter and elsewhere. People were very excited about it. I think people just were like, oh God, we need something wholesome and happy and something that makes us feel good right now. I can't remember exactly what was going on that week, but it just made a lot of people happy in the moment. And I can't wait. I want to see that documentary. I hope it gets a decent release. But
yeah, I've seen the trailer twice in theaters, and both times it made me kind of emotional. My wife was immediately like, why aren't we showing our kid Mr. Rogers?
Right.
You know? So they need to release that on streaming or something so that we can all inundate our kids with Mr. Rogers.
So how do you feel about Ocean's 8?
I think it looks like a completely fine movie. I'm glad that, you know, I like the Ghostbusters, so that's kind of, I feel like it's a pretty crass way to subjugate these like all female casts and to say like, oh, this is its new thing, its new subgenre, its new twist on, it's like, I think that's kind of cynical and kind of gross in a way. So I don't need it necessarily. It can just be its own thing, you know? I don't need it to be a remake or a twist on Ocean's 8. And then you add the fact that it's not like it's directed by Jennifer Kent or, you know, another another female director that really knows what she's doing. It's directed by old white man Gary Ross, who is a really good director. And I mean, Seabiscuit is great. I haven't seen Pleasantville, if you can imagine. I didn't think his Hunger Games was that good. It's just one of those things where. But then again, I just saw Tully and recommended it, and that's directed by, you know, white dude in his 40s, and it's a female-centric movie. So, I don't know. I don't know if I'm picking on it or what, but it's just a little bit inconsistent to me that Soderbergh wouldn't shepherd this as not just a female-driven heist movie, but also an opportunity for a female director, and instead, you know, give it to his buddy, Gary.
Well, look, I agree with you that I forget which prominent actress said this recently. I think it was Rachel Weisz, maybe, when they were talking about the potential for a female Bond, where if it wasn't her, I apologize, or maybe it was like Rosamund Pike or somebody. They're like, no, I'm not interested. We don't want sloppy seconds, you know?
That's a really good way of putting it.
Yeah, we want our own original character that we can build on, right? And that people will likely take to, and that will turn into its own franchise that were created for and by women. And I feel the same way about Ghostbusters and Ocean's 8. And it just, it seems like, what's the term I'm looking for here? Like appeasing, like a female audience. Like, as if they, it's not like they're like, we want our Ocean's 11. It's not like,
Ocean's 11 has been actually
Ocean's 11. It's like, no, we want our group heist movie, right? Like, it doesn't have to be Ocean's 11. I keep saying this over and over. Like, just make a female heist movie. And I understand, like, and call it something else completely differently. And I understand it might be similar to Ocean's 11, and it might borrow from that, but it doesn't mean it has to be that, right? Like, plenty of movies influence other movies, you know, and plenty of movies are similar to other movies. It just doesn't necessarily mean that they're the same thing or that they need to be specifically cut from the same cloth. And I understand that, you know, they're using the pre-existing property that you know, everybody knows, and they're going to attach it to a brand, and hopefully that'll help it in terms of the awareness in the market. But that just kind of bothers me on a fundamental level. That's all. That being said, I think this movie looks pretty fun, and I agree that Gary Ross is a very good director. And I actually liked his Hunger Games. I thought he did a good job, but... Man, it's just, you know, I think...
And, like, well, if it's going to be an Ocean's thing, then why isn't it about Julia Roberts' character? Like, I think that would be way more fun, just the character that she had in those two movies. She sat out the third one, but I just feel like that would be a fun thing where you took that character and made her have to undergo a heist, because that's so
maybe,
against
yeah.
her character, you know?
Maybe she'll pop up, you know, but all I'm saying is if you had made a heist movie... with Sandra Bullock, Kate Blanchett, Anne Hathaway, the list goes on. I think people would have been really excited about that regardless.
Also, mathematically, 8 is less than 11, 12, and 13. So what are you saying? What are you telling us?
It takes less women to do the job, I guess.
But I guess one is better, too. So maybe it's like a, you know, it's a count. That's a, you know, it's a list.
I don't know. It bugs me, but I will see this movie because I think there's just too many talented people involved. I like heist movies, and it has all the ingredients that it needs, I think, other than the title. That's all. And then that same weekend, speaking of, you know, let's champion these original idea movies, there's a B movie coming out called Hotel Artemis. I don't know if you know anything about this.
No.
It's directed by somebody named Drew Pierce. But I think it's kind of the John Wick ilk.
Drew Pierce rings a bell. I don't know what
yeah,
he's
so
from.
Jodie Foster, Sterling K. Brown, Jeff Goldblum, and
Ooh.
Others star in this dystopian action film that revolves around a woman, played by Jodie Foster, who runs a secret hospital for criminals. So
I'm down.
Just,
that kind of sounds awesome.
It does. I just watched the trailer, and it looks kind of cool. The only thing is, Jodie Foster is doing an accent, and
doing an accent of some sort.
I know, and I really like the movie Elysium a lot more than most people. Man, Jodie Foster gives a strange performance in that. But
she basically plays like George W. Bush in that movie.
Yeah. So, but look, if Jodie Foster's in movies, that's probably a good thing. So
yeah, Jeff Goldblum. That's I'm down.
Yeah, yeah. So check out the trailer, see what you think.
Okay.
Again, I think it's kind of. It's kind of in the John Wick family of movies, which
have been one of the co-directors or something like that.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't have Google in front of me, so I can't.
Hotel Artemis is what that's called. And this guy, I just looked up Drew Pierce. He wrote the story for Mission Impossible Rogue Nation.
That's what he is. He's a McQuarrie bro.
Oh, okay. So that's
which
that
is
bodes
the,
well.
The, yep.
Oh, he has a screenwriting credit on Iron Man 3, too.
Okay.
All right. So let's give it a shot. Hotel Artemis that comes out June 8th. June 15th, most anticipated movie of the summer, Incredibles 2.
Sure. I'm in.
Is that number one for you now that Infinity War is behind us?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I mean, Mission Impossible is up there, but, you know, we've seen a McQuarrie Mission Impossible before, so I guess we've seen a Brad Bird Incredibles movie, but not recently.
Man, just to have Brad Bird back at Pixar.
Yeah, and the cast is back, and it's just, it looks, I can't say that anything in the trailers has really, like, blown me away, you know, or anything like that, other than just like, oh, that looks good.
I don't know a lot about it, to be honest with you.
The
trailers
thing,
have been really short, and
yep.
I there's very little I know other than it's Pixar, it's Incredibles, it's Brad Bird, done.
And it seems like Holly Hunter is more of the lead this time, you know,
ooh,
which
that's
is
interesting.
Very cool. I'm definitely okay with that. So I'm always ready for a Brad Bird movie.
Okay,
live action or not. Okay.
God bless you. that same weekend, there's a remake of the movie Superfly, directed by, and I quote, Director X.
Somebody had to do it eventually. It was going to happen. This guy was the guy.
But Michael Kenneth Williams and Jason Mitchell are in that. It's starring Trevor Jackson as Superfly. So we'll see what that's all about.
I mean, I have to assume that that's a music video director of some sort. But at the same time, I just see these studio executives like salivating over Director X of that, over this anonymous guy that can just make movies.
And you gotta admire that. I guess if somebody can call themselves Mick G, then this is fine.
Yeah.
Okay, and then there's this ridiculous comedy called Tag.
Yeah, God, the most marketed movie of the summer, possibly. I have seen that trailer 7,000 times.
Yeah, and it's just so stupid. And there's really talented people involved, you know?
It's one of those where it's like there's one joke in it that tells the whole story where he's like, oh, I think he's Episcopalian, and then somebody else is like, what does Episcopalian believe? And like, oh, they only eat fish. And then it's like, okay, that's a good joke. That's a funny joke. And then somebody else is like, that's a pescatarian. And you're like, okay, this is that movie. This is that movie that gives you a pretty funny joke and then walks up with a shovel and hits you in the face and tells you to laugh. And the way it positions Jeremy Renner, it's just like, it just looks like there's, I don't know, looks like, I like Jeremy Renner an awful lot, and I guess he's been in some good action movies, but the way that they position him is this kind of like, you know, I don't know, I don't see him as this, he should easily be playing one of those bro dudes as he would, like, this, like, stealthy action superhero guy that he's kind of, like, in that movie. You know, they're, like, if that character was played by Daniel Craig, I would buy it. But I don't know. Does that make sense? Does that criticism make sense?
I don't know. I think he has some comedy chops.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like that that movie positions him as kind of like this, like, unattainable cool guy. And I just don't
right.
think Jeremy Renner is an unattainable – he's an everyman. You know, I think that's how he became famous, was being the regular guy stuck in Iraq and obsessed with bombs. And even on the Avengers, you know, he's like the blue collar kind of guy. So to I don't know. You see what I'm saying? Like, I feel like Daniel Craig is like the smooth.
Well, John Hamm's in the movie. Why don't they just swap places?
Oh, there you go. Yeah, perfect. Makes perfect sense.
Yeah. So you've got other talented people in this movie, like Ed Helms, Jake Johnson, Hannibal Buress, John Hamm. Like,
yeah.
Oh, but it's based on a true story, so I guess we should see it.
Yeah.
All right, I think we've spent far too long on that movie. Jurassic World is next.
Yep. So I am looking forward to this, and against all my best judgment, and with the knowledge of that I may not get to even see this in the theater, our kid is due the 24th, and this comes out, what is the date, the 22nd, is that right?
Yep.
Yeah, so I think all of us parents can kind of see the writing on the wall, right? I'm not seeing this movie in the theater. This is going to be a Redbox special.
What? So this will definitely be the first Jurassic movie that you've not seen in a theater, correct?
That would be absolutely true. It would be the first one that I wouldn't have seen opening day.
Oof, man.
No, sorry, I didn't see. I don't know if I saw. No, yeah, I saw Jurassic Park first showing first day it was out. Same with the Lost World. I didn't see the Lost World first showing, but it was definitely opening night. And then Jurassic Park 3, it took off of work to go see it first showing first day it came out. Jurassic World, I believe I saw it opening night, but it may have been opening weekend. Maybe I'll make time for it. My wife understands who I am, but she wants to see this probably as much, if not more, than me. She's a pretty big fan of the fourth movie. So I think if I went to go without her, she would not be happy. But if I took her, she would not be happy, because at that point, she's not going to want to be sitting anywhere for 2 hours.
Yeah, you know, I'll probably see it, but I kind of wish we could trade places. I'd rather...
Yeah, well, hey.
I'd rather be up all
night
with a newborn,
look,
with a crying newborn, than maybe
you've
come to see this movie.
Your daughter seems to be turning out just fine. You've got experience at this. I think that that's what we should do. You just come up here and take care of an infant.
I don't know who wins in that scenario. I don't know but
let me sell it. Try to sell you on it at least.
The trailers haven't yet.
Yeah, the first trailer, I agree, is all right. So let's start from the beginning. So the Jurassic World, it's I am so mixed on that movie. You know, I think it's got some highlights. It's got some lowlights, and I just every time I think about it or watch it, I get just a strange mix of emotions on it. I can understand why it's so popular because it's kind of, you know, it's popcorn entertainment, but I can also understand why people think it's awful. It's, you know, it is what it is. So you've got that kind of going in. I don't really, you know, I'm kind of on weird footing going in. Obviously, I'm a big fan of this franchise, particularly that first movie, obviously. So that's kind of iffy. And then they released the title, which is an awful title. Like, it's so bad, right? It's like Terminator Genesis level bad, in my opinion. Are you with me on this title?
I mean, it sounds like a PlayStation 2 game.
Yes. I mean, no, I went on a Twitter rant a few months ago about how there are bad Jurassic Park video games with much better titles than Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. It just makes absolutely no sense. I wasn't crazy about the Jurassic World change, you know, like why not just either call it Jurassic Park 4 or do the colon thing with that, but okay, fine. If you just want to use the term Jurassic and tag that at the beginning of other words, that'd be fine. So if this was like Jurassic Kingdom or something, like, okay, or whatever, like, I would be okay with that. But to throw a colon onto a movie title that's already a sequel title, like a, you know, an altered sequel, it's just stupid and confusing. It'd be like if they made a Mission Impossible movie and then they just called it Mission Accomplished, and then the next movie was Mission Accomplished Rogue Protocol.
Yeah, you know what bugs me about the mission titles is that it's already got a colon in the title.
Yeah,
and then there's another colonized word, and it's just too much punctuation.
Yeah, too much. I agree. Those movies are good enough to overwhelm, but yes, I agree.
So tell me, what's like the one single image that from Jurassic World that most, like, in the pit of your stomach makes you just grimace and think, oh, God, what is it?
In Jurassic World, the first one?
Yes.
The opening of the movie, starting on white, and then being a footprint of a tiny bird, a digital bird, and then you move back and it's like a snowy front yard in their front yard.
Right.
And it makes no sense. And it's just
That's
like,
fine.
What are you doing?
I thought you were going to say the hamster ball because...
That's pretty bad.
Yeah, it's really bad. And the hamster ball, by my count, is on at least 2 Jurassic World 2 posters.
Yeah.
So we're going to get more hamster ball. Even more.
Yeah, it was like the crux of the first trailer too. So continuing down my line of reasoning, the first trailer was not great because it was like Hamster Ball the movie, but then also it ended with like, here's a bunch of dinosaurs drowning. Come see the movie, and it gave me these vibes of like the DC Universe movies where it's like, here's all the things you love, but they're dark and sad. Here's Superman, but he's sad and a murderer. Here's Batman, but he brands people. It's this trend of, remember the stuff you liked? You're dumb for liking it, and now it's ugly, and we made it ugly. That's the feeling I got from the first trailer.
Yeah. I think it's
but,
the thing. Go ahead. Sorry.
But the second trailer is a little bit more encouraging. Sorry. Good.
No, I don't know. It just looks like a big mess to me, and it looks ugly. And I think an unfortunate theme when it comes to like big sequels like this is let's go bigger and worse. You know what
darker,
I mean? In terms
yeah.
of like in terms of carnage and
yeah.
and ugliness and that like that's not so appealing to me. Like and you know I. It's hard to sort of describe like where you go from bigger, which is obviously where sequels are naturally inclined to start. But uglier is certainly not like.
Well, but it works sometimes, you know. I mean, Star Trek Into Darkness. We you and I enjoy that movie, and it's right there in the title. You know, it's a darker take on that. And Empire Strikes Back is a dark trip into that universe.
You certainly want the stakes to get higher. Right? Like, and sometimes when the stakes get higher, things get worse, you know, and the predicament gets worse for people. But I don't think that it should be at the expense of most of the imagery that you sell people on. And I think that you want these movies, for lack of a better term, to be fun, you know, like a Jurassic Park movie should be an adventure. It should be a lot of fun. It should be about likable characters who are put in these horrifying situations, but make it out of it fun set pieces driven obviously by special effects. This movie, the trailer for this movie just seems to take it to a really nasty level.
Two of the best scenes in the first Jurassic Park movie are scenes where children are in mortal danger. Like one
mm-hmm.
of the most iconic shots in that movie is like a pane of glass separating two children from being eaten by an animal.
Right.
And it's awesome. And so I feel like the fourth movie, Jurassic World, tries to kind of recapture that with the hamster ball thing, but it sucks because it looks bad and it's just dumb looking and it looks like they're on a soundstage. But whereas this Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom trailer showcases like this raptor creature like creeping into this little girl's bedroom and stalking her, and I think that is pretty
stupid.
Cool. Oh, okay.
I think it's
okay.
stupid.
That's,
yeah.
Okay.
I see that and I'm like, okay, this is we're not that there's anything wrong with this movie for obviously different reasons. We are moving into Carnosaur territory.
Oh, well, I'm the first to admit that Jurassic World is basically, I think that I said that in our review, it's a Carnosaur movie with a $200 million budget.
Yeah. And it's just silly. It's like Killer Clowns from Outer Space. You know, like,
yeah, but it's, I mean, all of these are kind of B movie, you know, creature features. It's just, are you going to pull it off with a level of grace and style close to Steven Spielberg? And I feel like that Bayona, Bayona in that trailer does kind of try to go for this kind of, more of a horror aspect, and I'm okay with that as a direction versus whatever the hell direction. The first, the Jurassic World was like, hey, we want to make this movie look like a video game cutscene or a Transformers movie, you know, just like this overlit, flat nothingness. And so this one, it actually looks like it has some sort of, directorial direction, at least. So that, and honestly, we can wrap this up because I know this is just going to shut you down. Speaking of, I mean, Spielberg is kind of the guy that makes the darker, uglier sequels, you know, with Temple of Doom and then The Lost World. One of my appeals for this movie is that it looks like it lifts an awful lot from The Lost World with the rescue op and the dinosaurs getting on the mainland and stuff. And I like that movie and nobody else does. So that's, I'm encouraged by it for it looking like a movie that you hate. So,
I'm a little inclined to disagree with you about Temple of Doom. You know, that I think that movie is a blast, and I think
it's
there's
a great
a lot
movie.
Of,
no,
I think there's a lot
I love
of humor.
That movie. But
I think there's a more than a tinge of humor under that underlines a lot of the darkness. You know,
well,
in terms
you
of
can,
even during the human
the
sacrifice scene, the characters.
You can say
I mean, they ride a freaking
the
roller
world.
Coaster in the movie, man.
Yeah, but you can say the same about The Lost World, which has roller coaster sequences and has a big 76 ball, as the gymnastics scene. So that's, I'm not saying that you have to like those movies the same. I'm just saying that Temple of Doom definitely tries to take things darker with endangering children and making it about human sacrifice. And so Lost World does the same thing and kind of having a little bit more carnage and darkness. And so Spielberg does that. I don't think there's any denying that. Whether or not that works all the time, I can't decide for you. But I think that's what they're trying to do here, and I guess it's at least not a carbon copy of Jurassic World directed by Colin Trevorrow. So that's kind of where I'm optimistic.
Kalima!
I won't do my short round impression.
Yeah. Oh, in that same weekend, I don't know if it's going to go wide, but It Follows did somehow, but David Robert Mitchell's follow-up to that, it's called Under the Silver Lake, and it's out the same weekend, at least it's scheduled to be. So that's, you know, if that's out there, I may opt to see that first.
I know the title, and I haven't seen It Follows, so...
Okay, quickly, this is about Andrew Garfield stars as a disillusioned man who meets a mysterious woman and then embarks on a search through Los Angeles to find her when she suddenly disappears. So
yeah,
it
looks like Mulholland Drive adjacent, kind of.
Ooh, okay. Well, yeah, I think dark is the key word that weekend.
So. Sure, absolutely, yeah. No one's going to have the time.
Moving on, Friday, June 29th, that Sicario sequel. It's called Sicario: Day of the Soldado. And it stars Josh Brolin, Benicio del Toro reprising their roles. So no original director, no Emily Blunt. I think
was a highlight of that movie. I know you threw shade earlier, but I think Emily
Blunt
is fantastic in that movie.
Well, I think she's generally just good, usually, like in pretty much everything she's in. But for some reason, that performance didn't work for me.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Sorry. I mean, Matthew Modine's in this.
Well, so. I think she, her and Denis Villeneuve went over to the Mary Poppins movie, right? He directed that. That's what she was busy doing. And I'm joking.
I was thinking,
that'd be
maybe,
awesome.
I don't know.
That would be awesome.
It would. But do you have any interest in that?
Sicario 2?
Yeah.
No, not really. I mean, again, that's a Redbox special if I've ever seen it. Again, it's like if I need to escape my house and I have MoviePass, sure. And
man, I can't believe that
else.
Just didn't go straight to Redbox. You know?
Seriously.
Like,
When I
saw that it was coming out, when I saw the trailer, I was like, this is straight to video stuff. I can't
believe like, where's Lou Diamond Phillips and Tom Selleck in this thing?
Yeah. So, I really like Sicario a lot. But, yeah, I mean, are you not a little surprised that it got a sequel like this? Like, it's not Pirates of the Caribbean, you know?
Did it make money? Like, I don't even know if it made that much money.
I bet it killed on DVD.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think everybody's dad.
Amazon Prime, you know, for 4 years now.
Yeah, but the people that don't know how to use streaming platforms are the people that are renting this thing.
I guess.
So, because
okay, that same weekend, there is a basketball comedy called Uncle Drew. I'm guessing you, A, don't know what this is, and B, have no interest in it.
When you say don't know what this is, you mean actually basketball. Like, I don't know what basketball is. Because I'm pretty close. I'm dangerously close to that being true. Aren't there a bunch of, like, actual NBA stars in that?
Yes. Yes. So, there's a current NBA star named Kyrie Irving is on the Boston Celtics, and he's the star of this movie. This is based on what I believe is a Pepsi or a Nike ad that he used to do. Where he would, like, dress, it was kind of like Bad Grandpa, the basketball movie, where he dressed up like an old man who can actually, like, still play basketball and, like, hang with young people.
I'm familiar with that. Okay.
Yeah. So, anyway, they made a movie out of it. Shaquille O'Neal's in it. Reggie Miller. Lil Rel Howery from Get Out, you know, the buddy from Get Out. He's like the second lead. And then, anyway, this is the last time you're going to think about this movie. So anyway,
Sounds kind of fun. I don't know. I don't think I'll go see it in the theater because I won't be seeing anything. But
yeah,
you know,
as an NBA freak, there's a good chance I'll see this in the theater. I saw Like Mike on day one when that movie came out, the Lil Bow Wow movie.
Oh yeah.
Because there's also another movie with Anne Hathaway and Rebel Wilson coming out called The Hustle, which is a remake of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels that weekend, which I've never even heard of this. And
I guess at least they didn't use the title, but in that case, it's like they probably could have benefited from that title.
I mean, that's like Overboard. It's like using the Overboard title.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
But like, so Anne Hathaway is starring in two heist comedy remakes this summer. That's crazy.
That is crazy. And it's called The Hustle?
The Hustle.
That sounds like a Ron Howard title.
The Ron Howard hate, I don't understand. But,
not hate. It's just like, it sounds like it could be the dilemma. You know, could be a Owen Wilson, Vince Vaughn comedy.
R.I.P. Gwen Hedley. She was in the original Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Yeah, I know. It's great.
She died like 2 years ago now?
Honestly, I did not know that she passed away. That's really sad.
Yep, she did. July 4th. Opening on July 4th. Here's the new July 4th movie that should tell you that summer movie season has changed. The First Purge.
A prequel.
Yeah. In fact, the description here says, the Purge franchise finally goes the prequel route. This time, tracing the origins of the National Day of Mayhem that allows any crime to be committed for a 12-hour period with no legal consequences. I don't recognize anybody in it. I don't even know if the person who directed the first one directed this one. But anyway, have you seen any of these Purge movies?
I have not.
Okay. I saw the first one. I think the concept is interesting, but I don't know. I just, like, the way that they market them. Like,
I mean, I made a short film about a similar premise, and so I feel like I need to watch them all.
Well...
In case I get hired to make one of them someday.
They're beeping in. Okay, so yeah, I've heard that the last couple of Purge movies are actually kind of good, but just like in a strictly like B movie surface level of enjoyment. So they might be worth checking out. Frank Grillo, the guy who plays Crossbones in the MCU, is the star of those, I believe, or at least one of them. So,
well, and the last one made sense as a July 4th because it was like an election year and it was like about America somehow. But then I don't know why it continues to be like a July 4th release. Maybe that one made enough money that they're like, okay, now we're doing this.
Yeah, I think they're just making money. So this one probably will too. Blumhouse at it. Friday, July 6th, that same weekend, Ant-Man and the Wasp will be out.
That new trailer looks like so much fun. Paul Rudd was one of the highlights of Civil War. I think Peyton Reed did a really good job with Ant-Man, and I think this is a great chance for him to get out of the shadow of Edgar Wright. I think Evangeline Lilly is always entertaining. Michael Douglas is back. And then, of course, Michael Peña's character is another highlight of just the overall Marvel Cinematic Universe. And just to see him and his smile on a movie screen again, that's worth the price of admission. So I am obviously I'm on an Infinity War high right now, which they're taking advantage of. But I just think that this looks like a lot of fun, looks like a great change of pace for the Marvel Universe after Infinity War and for the summer, really. You know, I mean, you've got Jurassic World and The Purge and all this other stuff, and then finally you have a simple, fun superhero movie, you know, without global implications, assumedly, you know, and I think that that's what made the first Ant-Man so much fun and such a nice fresh breath of air. So I'm expecting even better things from this one.
Yeah, I expect the same thing from the first one, just like easy breezy fun. Like, it's slight, I guess, or like what people might consider minor MCU, but...
Which makes it major in MCU, in my... this wouldn't be in my top... The first one wouldn't be in my top five, but I feel like if this second one does all the things that the first one did right and then adds a little bit of flavor, like a little bit of unique flavor to it, it could be a top five just because of that. Like, you know, so many of these Marvel movies have become so big and so dire that in superhero movies in general, that just having a, you know, a movie that harkens back to the scale of the original Spider-Man movie, which I don't think is a great movie, but it was like nice and simple, and or Batman Forever, you know, or something like that. Like, we need a little bit more of that, and a little, and not everything can be Infinity War, I guess. So that's what makes me really excited about this. And again, I think the action in that trailer, I think Peyton Reed is he looks like he's got something to prove.
Yeah, I think it looks good, and I'm excited about everybody you mentioned. Walton Goggins, Alabama native,
yes,
the fray.
Yes,
but also you mentioned Evangeline Lilly. I just think it's cool because I really liked her character in the first Ant-Man movie, and it's just kind of neat because, I mean, for a lot of that movie, she's just kind of like standing there with this look on her face and kind of like expressing, I have to train this idiot. Like, I'm way better than him. You know what I mean? Like, I could do this. And now she gets to do it, and it's just kind of neat because she's a 38-year-old actress who is now the co-lead in an action movie. Like, she looks like an action star. I thought she did in the first Ant-Man, and I'm glad she's getting an opportunity to do that in Ant-Man and the Wasp. So it's cool that they're giving what was a secondary character who was obviously liked and had a lot of potential, they're putting her front and center in what should be a good time.
And to go back to stupid sequel title talk, but I like the title convention here. You know, it's not Ant-Man 2, and it's not Ant-Man : Revenge of the Ghost Villain. You know, it's Ant-Man and the Wasp. It's this character that you saw before, and now she gets top billing too, because she should have gotten top billing to begin with, honestly. I think that's one thing, that's one of the major dings against that first movie, is that it has to construct a bit of a maze to justify, you know, leaving her out of the mix, and this one doesn't have to do that, so it can just excel on these two characters that get along and definitely like each other, but also don't in some ways. You know, they're still kind of on each other's cases, and I think that will make for a fun dynamic. And then again, you have one of the best supporting casts in of any Marvel movie, and yeah, I'm down.
Okay, that same weekend there is a movie that'll probably get a limited release at first called Sorry to Bother You, which I think premiered at Sundance, and it stars Lakeith Stanfield. Tessa Thompson is in it. Armie Hammer, Lakeith Stanfield from Get Out, Atlanta, Short Term 12, a really talented guy. Apparently, this movie's directed by a rapper named Boots Riley. But it's a satire about a black telemarketer whose career is propelled by how he's able to use his quote-unquote white voice over the phone. So I'm not exactly sure what that means, but, you know, I think that Lakeith Stanfield is an extremely talented guy who has needed a vehicle, like a movie where he kind of gets to be front and center and the star of it. And Tessa Thompson is obviously pretty great, and add Armie Hammer to it. And what sounds like good buzz around this could be one to keep an eye on moving forward. Friday, July 13th, Skyscraper and Hotel Transylvania 3, : the most necessary title ever, Summer Vacation.
No. What?
Once again, directed by Genndy Tartakovsky.
Yeah, where do you think he got the Samurai Jack, you know, sequel money?
Man,
I got nothing but love for this franchise because without it, he wouldn't left us with the final season of Samurai Jack.
Yeah, the best thing on TV in 2017. I've never seen any of these, and I don't plan on changing that. If I'm going to show my kid a Dracula movie, I'll probably, you know, go with like a really gory Hammer horror movie from the 70s or something, or just the Coppola one.
So what about Skyscraper?
So when the trailer came out, I was like kind of totally on board with that. And I felt like, wow, what momentum for The Rock. You know, he had Jumanji and then he's going to have Rampage and that's going to make a ton of money. And then he's going to have Skyscraper. And it's like, wow, he's just going to have like three big hits right in a row. And it's like, maybe the fact that, you know, two of those were based on kind of original ideas, kind of, but not, you know, other movies, that it'll really prove that The Rock is like this big star and he'll be able to take some more risks and just be like the guy that we all want him to be, you know, of just like this guy that leads original action movies and is this all around star. And then I saw Jumanji and it was like, wow, it was really fun. And yep, he's on a roll. And then Rampage came out. And I feel like that definitely kind of threw a wrench in everything. And I don't know. So my enthusiasm for this has kind of fizzled. And just in general, I think I and maybe some other parts of the culture are getting Rock fatigue. But by the time this guy, I don't know if I'll see Rampage in the theater, but by the time Skyscraper comes out, I may be back into it. I think what's cool about this is that it's a, you know, much like Furiosa, it's a handicapped action star. I think that's cool. I think it's a slightly original idea. It's kind of like if they made a Die Hard reboot, this would be a decent, kind of a decent approach to it, you know, add a futuristic bent to it. And I do like The Rock, so I think it's encouraging, but I don't know, unless the buzz is like really good, I don't know if I'm going to make time for this one.
Yeah, I mean, I like the idea. It does feel like a throwback to the 80s.
Well, it is a remake of the Anna Nicole Smith one, right?
Oh, God. Yeah, okay. We'll go with it. The Rock,
which was
be,
like a ripoff of Die Hard, by the way.
The Rock is the biggest movie star on the planet, and I really don't know why, because he hasn't really made many good movies. And I know people really love Jumanji, and it made a ton of money, but I don't know that The Rock, as the sole lead of an action movie like this, like, it just hasn't worked yet. Like, it hasn't fully clicked yet, and he hasn't reached the heights of his own star status that makes these movies possible. I mean, like, he's making these movies still, like Skyscraper and San Andreas and Rampage, that he probably should have been making in like the early to mid 2000s to help boost his action career, you know?
Yeah.
And by now he should be the sole lead of a franchise like Fast and Furious or Mission Impossible, but he's not. And I don't know if it's a script problem or The Rock just wants too much creative control. And so he hires yes men behind the camera. But the movies just while they have good ideas and have, you know, plenty of potential, they all just feel so slight and lightweight and synthetic, and the action is so, and they're very dependent on half decent special effects, and they're all just kind of designed to be very safe in terms of preserving The Rock's brand. And not really challenging him, and you know, for lack of a better phrase, helping him flex his sort of action hero muscle, and really helping him grow in that role, because it should be bigger than what it is.
Yeah, I mean, if Arnold Schwarzenegger had Instagram in the 80s, would we have gotten Predator and Total Recall and Terminator 2? You know, or would he have, because in the 80s, the only way to kind of boost and support your name value is to make good movies and to make movies that people responded to. So you get good directors that bring the best out of you and frame things in a good way. And that's what you have to do. But now The Rock is as much of an Instagram star as he is a movie star. So
yeah,
really,
he was, yeah, he was Instagramming every day from set, you know?
Yeah, because like, that's why people like him, is because he's transparent. He's like a normal person that happens to be 9 feet tall and jacked to the gills and makes these movies. And when he's most successful, he's kind of subverting that, except for Fast and Furious. That's the only one where he kind of leans into the star image and then actually, you know, works for him. But like Jumanji succeeds because, not just because of him, but also because he is subverting himself by playing a geeky teenager, and then he's supported by hilarious actors like Kevin Hart and Jack Black. So, you know, when you take that away and you leave him with Rampage, where it's just him and CGI monsters, nobody really is that interested. And that's what I'm afraid of with Skyscraper, too, is that, you know, it's more fun to watch him Instagramming the making of Skyscraper than it is to watch or relate to anything going on in Skyscraper, because the movie is more... His experience of, he made the movie Skyscraper more to have something to do on Instagram than to make a great movie. Is kind of,
yeah,
the
gave,
feeling
gave him
that
content.
We get.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Gave
and,
him social gives media him, content.
Gives him hits, yes. But like,
okay.
Yeah. So, and you're right. I mean, if he had gotten the John Wick guys to make a Skyscraper movie, you know, and or Gareth Edwards, you know, if he was just like, okay, who's like the best possible current action director I can work with to give this script, or what old name can I boost? You know, like, you know, will Martin Scorsese shoot this action movie with The Rock if I just give him an unlimited amount of budget? You know, like, that's the, those are the kind of risks that, in a weird way, Schwarzenegger would make. You know, he would work with a weirdo like Paul Verhoeven, but you know, he doesn't. The Rock doesn't need to. He just doesn't
yeah.
need to. So he works with Brad Payton and Ross and Marshall Thurber.
Yeah, what does he have to lose? He's already the biggest movie star on the planet, so why should he challenge himself? You know? Like,
yeah, I mean, it goes both ways. You know, why should he and why should he, you know?
You know, like, put The Rock in an Edgar Wright movie. How do you think that'll do?
Good Lord. Don't
you
say
know?
That.
You know what I mean? Like, just hand him over. Or, you know, The Rock is obviously a genius entertainer. Like, we knew
I mean, that's
that.
Another thing is that his greatest body of work was when he was, like, 28. You
yeah,
know?
Easily. And, when you, yeah, you easily know? When he was – his pro wrestling career is, in my opinion, I'm sure yours too and many others, the best thing he has ever done as an entertainer.
Oh, yeah.
And,
yep.
and he, like, and he's still so charismatic and so likable, and everybody loves him and looks forward to what he does. It's just none of it has really come close to bottling that charisma in the same way and telling stories by using that charisma the same way that his wrestling career did. But look, I mean, he still has plenty of time, and I just hope that he challenges himself and finds good people to work with to make these action movies he wants to make, because he could be today's Arnold Schwarzenegger. Like, it's all everything's there for him to do that. It's just a matter, like, Arnold just picked better scripts and he picked better directors to work with.
Yeah. Agreed.
All right. The next week, Friday, July 20th, Equalizer 2, directed by Antoine Fuqua, obviously reteaming with Denzel. And then Mamma Mia 2, : Here We Go Again, exclamation point.
Yeah,
I'm willing to just move on to the next week if you are, unless you,
well,
you know.
I have not seen The Equalizer, but Antoine Fuqua is a pretty good action director. I kind of liked his Magnificent Seven remake. I feel like Denzel is always worth checking out, and I've heard good things about the first Equalizer. My dad loves it. So, yeah, but I've also heard, like, other, you know, action movie nerds and stuff have responded well to that. So, yeah, I might actually, you know, see if I can make it out to that one, if I can catch the first one, which I think is a remake of a Bronson movie.
Isn't it a show? Wasn't it the show?
Maybe
that,
a show, yeah.
Wasn't it what Rob Reiner was trying to watch in The Wolf of Wall Street? Wasn't he like, I'm trying to watch The Equalizer? And tell me if I'm wrong, too. Was Mamma Mia the first one? Wasn't it the counter-programming the week The Dark Knight came out?
Yep, same weekend 10 years ago, July 20th
wow.
weekend, which is
wow.
my birthday. It was the only reason I remember that, but 10 years ago.
10 so. Years later, Mamma Mia 2.
Hey, it's not it's not too late for Nolan to crank out like another Batman movie to throw on that weekend. Just to squash Mamma Mia.
Hey, man, props to giving work to Stellan Skarsgård. That's what I'm talking about. The next week is my number two most anticipated, July 27th, Mission Impossible - Fallout. Bring it.
Yeah. Creating CGI mustache lines, you know, across
Hollywood.
Yeah, you
know, I saw this trailer again the other day. I don't know if it was, I think it was before Infinity War, and for God's sakes, the song that is in that trailer, I just will
ben,
never
Ben, you can't
understand.
Fight the friction. You can't fight the friction. Can't do it.
Understand the choice.
Can't
but
do it.
I just like, I just sat there and soaked in that trailer and was like, everything about this looks freaking awesome. Like, I can't wait. And like, we're both huge fans of Rogue Nation and in this franchise in general. And it seems like, God, every director has really brought something to the table in this franchise. But man, I'm glad they're giving Christopher McQuarrie another shot at it.
Yeah, it's. I love that, but at the same time, like, God, it's so weird. Like, it's breaking from tradition. And I'm sure he's probably got, like, a trilogy in mind or something, you know, where he's going to make his definitive series of Mission Impossible movies. But, yeah, it's Tom Cruise. I mean, Tom Cruise is one of the greatest movie stars alive, and he tries to deliver every time. I didn't see American Made, or Jack Reacher 2, but... You know, he's just motivated to make great things. He learned to stunt fly a helicopter for this thing. That's insane. So yeah, everything about it looks awesome. It's filmed in IMAX. One really cool thing about this one, I think, is that it is a completely, I mean, we mentioned Drew Pearce earlier. He helped develop the script for Rogue Nation. McQuarrie has gone on record as saying that script kind of was made up as they went along, especially the third act. Which I don't think you'd ever guess, based on the way it's put together. It's a pretty, pretty well-crafted movie. But this one is fully written by Chris McQuarrie. So, like, zero meddling from anybody. It was just probably him and Tom Cruise on a yacht pitching ideas back and forth for story things. And then he went off and wrote his movie that he was going to get however many millions of dollars to make and do whatever he wanted with, you know? So that for me is very encouraging that this should be unfiltered Chris McQuarrie and Tom Cruise just making us hate our Blu-ray players, you know, and making us demand to see movies in the theater. And so that's a good thing.
Another way that they're breaking tradition is bringing back a female lead in the franchise and Rebecca Ferguson, who is like the quiet MVP of Rogue Nation.
Yeah, absolutely. And it looks like, am I crazy? Am I making this up? Is Paula Patton coming back too?
I don't know. I know that Michelle Monaghan,
not Paula Patton. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I don't know where I've got Paula Patton from. But, yeah, Michelle Monaghan is coming back. And I think that is a lot of fun because that's a, you know, between the end of Mission Impossible 3 and Ghost Protocol, so like, okay, that feels like a little bit of a loose end. Obviously, they addressed it in Ghost Protocol, but I like that McQuarrie is giving himself the challenge of taking this kind of one of the few loose ends narratively in this entire franchise and saying, okay, I'll tackle that. You know, I'll figure something out about how to best work with that. But it's at the end of the day, man, like, what a great franchise. Like, when the worst movie is an okay John Woo movie, you know, like that's impressive. And it's not it's far from being a bad movie. You know, it's still a John, it's one of John Woo's best American movies.
I take issue with you calling it the worst of the Mission Impossibles, but
okay. So you what do you think is, if you think Ghost Protocol is not as good as two, I'm hanging up right now.
Well,
don't do it,
man. Like I've always kind of stood with Mission Impossible 3 as what I've ranked last, but I watched it again like last year or something, and it was awesome. Man. Like they're
that
all
movie,
great.
That movie feels like it's 4 minutes long. It just flies by. It's like
they're all great.
Milkshake. They're all fantastic.
Yeah,
there's no point in trying to find the negatives.
I got a really soft spot for MIT. Really soft.
Hey, I can't blame you. It's every time I watch it, I get a little easier on it. So you know, and my wife has already demanded we do a marathon before this one, which is cool. And it's one of my favorite movie theater. I'll let you go on in a second. But one of my favorite movie theater experiences or moments in my entire life is going with my wife to see Rogue Nation. And after they do the big stunt at the beginning and it cuts to the opening credits, she looked at me and she was like, I'm excited. Like, this is like so much fun. And I was like, yeah, you're right. Like, it's, these movies just aim to please, and yeah, so more please.
Okay, Friday, August 3rd. I can't really tell what the big release is supposed to be. I guess it's this Christopher Robin movie with Ewan McGregor, the
Hook.
The Pooh.
Hook, Winnie the Pooh, but Hook?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Mark Forster directed it.
Yeah. Finding 100 Acre Wood Land.
I don't know. The trailer, I guess, was intriguing, but it's like Project
Quantum. Quantum of Tigger.
Projects like this bum me out in general.
I think that this one, I'm not a fan of the Disney live action things, but this one does, the Hook angle does intrigue me, and the trailer did have some sort of effect on me. I don't know if I'll rush out and see it, but it does look like a departure from the Beauty and the Beast formula of these live action things where it's like, hey, where's the script for the cartoon? Let's just shoot that real quick and then throw some CGI all over the place.
The other movie that weekend is called Mile 22, and it's a thriller from Peter Berg. You get one guess for who stars in it.
Yeah, how many, I mean, this is like a De Niro Scorsese thing at this point, right?
Or better? Okay.
Better?
It's about an intelligence operative attempting to smuggle a high-value target out of the country. So,
Maki.
I don't know. Yeah, Ronda Rousey's in it.
Oh, the lock for best supporting actress.
Oof, ouch. Okay, and there's also a movie coming out before we move on that weekend called The Spy Who Dumped Me. Oh, I think I saw this trailer recently. It looked really bad. It's Kate McKinnon and Mila Kunis and Justin Theroux, apparently. It's like it's kind of like that This Means War movie with Chris Pine and Tom Hardy.
Oh. McGee.
Like the female version of that.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Does Justin Theroux play his character from The Last Jedi?
Yeah, it's a spinoff. It's a Star Wars story. The Spy Who Dumped Me, a Star Wars story.
How many directors? That's rough. This Means War is awful. Like, it's like Tom Hardy and Chris Pine. What were they thinking?
Cha-ching!
There you go. Oh, it made a ton of money, too, definitely.
Yeah, McGee. Friday, August 10th, there's some movie called Dog Days, directed by Ken Marino, which is that's interesting. So I'm sure, there could be potential there. And then this weird movie, The Meg, is also coming out.
Man, The Meg. I have a soft spot for that because when I, like...
Turtle Prob?
Huh?
Turtle Pob?
No, I don't have any real feelings about Turtle Todd. But when I, like, first got on the internet in, like, 96 or 97 or something like that, the first thing I did was, like, look up movie rumors and movie news. And this was one of the first movies that I remember seeing, like, there's in development this movie about a giant shark. And at the beginning of the movie, it's a a prologue set in the dinosaur times, and this shark eats a T-Rex. And I was like, I'm in. Like, who, when does this movie come out? And now here we are, like, 19,000 years later, and it's happening. And I'm curious to see if it's going to retain that opening sequence, because I think that would be a pretty great way to start a movie. It's kind of sad, though, because the Jurassic World trailer has that pretty cool shot of, like, the Mesosaurus coming through the wave at the surfers. And it's like, well, that's the Meg, right? Like,
yeah. Well, I just, where's the line between, like, really, like, good, well-respected monster movies and then movies like, either Sharknado or Lake Placid, Deep Blue Sea,
yeah.
Deep Rising. You kind of see where I'm coming from, like what ballpark I'm in here. Like,
right.
I think those Piranha remakes, I get, the Piranha movies.
Yeah.
I think that this is probably where we are. I think this is less like The Host and more.
Right. At the end of the day, I think it always comes down to the director. You know, it's like if your monster movie has a director that does heavy lifting, like Bong Joon-ho or Steven Spielberg, then great. You know, you're gonna get something a little different. If your director is John Turtletaub, then
Okay, look, I know that you've got a lot of respect for journeyman directors. This guy is one of the few and proud. Let's just run through his filmography real quick, starting in 1992.
I don't think, has he had a movie since 2010? I mean, I guess you're about to tell me, so go for it.
Yeah. Okay, so he made Three Ninjas. He made Three Ninjas. He made Cool Runnings.
What? I had no clue that this guy made Runnings.
While You Were Sleeping, he made Phenomenon.
Dude,
he made,
what?
Yeah, he made
That was
Instinct.
The same year, wasn't it? Wasn't While You're Sleeping in Phenomenon both?
No, dude, he went 1992, 93, 95, 96. Just killing it.
This guy.
Left and right. 1999, after he did an episode of the From the Earth to the Moon miniseries, he did Instinct with Anthony Hopkins and Cuba Gooding Jr. I saw that at the theater. And then he did Disney's The Kid. And then he gets his biggest break of all with National Treasure in 2004. He directs that sequel. Then he makes The Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Right, yep.
Then he makes Last Vegas.
Oh, my God.
Which is one of those...
The Cameron Diaz joint?
No. This is one of those, like, old men.
Oh, no, that's like Morgan Freeman, right?
Yes. Robert De Niro, Michael Douglas.
The last, the exotic Marigold Casino.
Exactly. So yeah, don't F with Turtle Todd, man.
Dude, yeah, I know some stupid minute stuff about movies, but I would have never been able to tell you that the same guy made Three Ninjas, While You Were Sleeping, and Phenomenon. I would have never been able to tell you that.
How badass is that?
Okay, I'm in. The Meg.
Yeah.
He should
never have to buy a drink for the rest of his life.
Well, wait, he did both National Treasures, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Which are smash hits, aren't they?
Well, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, they're big hits. They both made like $500 million.
Yeah, I thought Sorcerer's Apprentice was his last movie. So that's why I was like, wow, he really needs something. Well, I guess he does still need something, but...
Well, that being said, I'm not really interested in this movie.
The Meg. <Okay. laughs>
I don't think it looks that great, but I don't know. Maybe it'll be a lot of fun.
But that's just a completely different conversation. But just look at that filmography, and then track Hollywood. You know, like, look at the kind of movies that this guy was able to make, and then eventually had to make just to get ahead. You know, just to work. You know, it's just, I think that's pretty interesting, and in a way, sad. You know, I feel like you can track the history of Hollywood from the 90s to the 2000s by looking at the filmography of John Turteltaub.
All right, so we're running out of steam here in mid-August. It's getting bad. We have some John Goodman movie called Captive State. It's Rupert Wyatt.
Oh, is that the story of him on the set of Roseanne?
Oh man. Wow. Rupert Wyatt of Rise of the Planet of the Apes and The Gambler fame.
And The Escapist, which is a really good Brian Cox movie that I think got him the gig for Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Did you see The Gambler?
No.
I heard it was kind of good.
Well,
I think it's a William Monahan script, too. I mean, he's the guy that wrote The Departed.
Oh, the cast is amazing. Like, it's got an incredible cast. Like, everything on paper looks good.
He's just a really interesting director, you know? I mean, he made this indie movie about a jailbreak, and then he made this huge CGI apes movie, didn't come back for the sequel, and instead made a character drama with Mark Wahlberg. And now he's doing, like, a movie star movie. Like, that's kind of cool. I don't know if The Gambler's good. Maybe he's on cocaine and completely lost his way. But, you know, I think that's kind of it's a cool trajectory for somebody to go to just kind of dip into the blockbuster thing and then instead go do other smaller movies for a little while.
There's another movie up. Yeah, I mean, that's fine. I need to see The Gambler and some of his other work. I literally am only drawing on Rise of the Planet of the Apes, but as soon as I walked out of the theater saying, who is that guy? You know?
Yeah, me
like,
too.
I thought that movie was so good, and I was disappointed too when they announced that he wasn't doing the Dawn of the Planet of the Apes or the sequel to that movie. I was like, oh man, not Rupert Wyatt. He made such a good movie. And then Matt Reeves was like, yeah, but me.
Yeah, Rupert who? Hubert, yeah. Wyatt.
Yeah. Okay, and so that same weekend, there's a movie called The Happy Time Murders, which I assume is a comedy. It's Melissa McCarthy and Elizabeth Banks in a noirish comedy about a human cop and a puppet detective who must work together to solve the serial murders of the cast of a popular 1980s children's show.
Oh, so it's like Roger Rabbit, but with Muppets.
Kind of, yeah.
That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, kind of. Joel McHale, Maya Rudolph, also in it. Brian Henson directing. Henson, Puppets. I wonder. Is Brian
Not
Henson...
John Henson?
No, he's writing Soderbergh movies now. is Brian Henson related to Jim?
Yes, he's his son. I believe Brian Henson directed Muppet Treasure Island and some of the other latter-day Muppet movies, so he knows what he's doing. Yeah,
there you go. He's making this, too. Okay, so, yeah. And then after that, there's a Matthew McConaughey movie called White Boy Rick I've never heard of about a police informant in Detroit. Sounds fun. And then the next week, August 24th, there's a Keanu Reeves sci-fi thriller called Replicas.
Okay.
So,
who, I mean, you got a director on that one?
Jeffrey Nachmanoff.
Okay.
It says Keanu Reeves and Alice Eve of Star Trek Into Darkness fame.
Yeah.
In this sci-fi thriller about a man who becomes obsessed with bringing his family back in any way possible after they are killed in a car accident. So,
okay.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's you know, it sounds like Keanu Reeves sci-fi. Eli Roth isn't directing, so it could be good. yeah. So that's kind of it, man. Like, there's a movie on August 31st called Kin, K-I-N, with James Franco and Zoe Kravitz. But yeah, I think we're done. We're tapped out
Wow.
here.
What a fizzle. Kind of fizzles
yeah.
there, doesn't it?
Oh, that's August. That's August for you, man.
Well, no Guardians. No Guardians of the Galaxies, I guess, this year, or maybe. I mean, who knows?
No, Marvel shot their wad early.
Yeah. So I think it looks like a pretty good summer. Again, it's pretty front loaded, obviously. I mean, to the greatest degree. I mean, the biggest movie came out before the season started.
Well, Mission Impossible comes out late July, so...
Right, yeah, that, so that's... It's got the Nolan spot of, like, is summer over? Nope. You know?
Yeah, here's grim, though.
Yeah, well, that's the time to go see Mission Impossible again. I guess. I don't know. Yeah, so you're saying Incredibles 2 is your pick of the summer?
That's number one. I'll just run through...
Because you're a freak
for
sequels.
Oh, yeah, big time. I'll just run through, like, what, to me, looks best or most intriguing. I've got Incredibles 2, Mission Impossible. I've got Solo on here just out of curiosity. Ocean's 8, Won't You Be My Neighbor, the Mr. Rogers movie. Sicario 2, and then Hotel Artemis. Those are the ones to me that...
Ant-Man? Like, Ant-Man isn't above
okay,
Sicario
Ant-Man,
2
okay.
for you?
Throw Ant-Man in there. That's fine.
Sicario and the Wasp.
La Wasp.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's the ones I definitely am seeing. Like, you'd have to do something to me physically to keep me from seeing them. Incredibles 2, Mission Impossible, Ant-Man, and I guess Jurassic World, you know.
Yeah, weren't going to see Jurassic World because of your baby.
I said I might not, but well, life finds a way.
Okay.
So, I mean, is there any question that Infinity War and Jurassic World are going to be 1 and 2 in terms of box office?
Well, probably not. I mean, they're.
You think Solo is going to eke
in
there?
I think so. I really do think Solo could do really well. I think it's actually tracking really well right now. I saw that like right now it's looking at like $150 to $175 million weekend, which obviously pales in comparison to what Marvel just did. But, you know, Solo, weirdly, is kind of a risk. So, you know.
God, you can just slap Star Wars on stuff, and it will just make money. That's just so great. Like,
Rogue One made
$1 billion.
Rogue One made $1 billion.
Yeah, and it's a depressing movie where everybody dies. Spoilers.
We knew that was going to happen. We know pretty much what's going to happen in Solo, too, you know?
Yeah. But, I mean, you don't think that the Jurassic World, I mean, I guess Jurassic World came out pre-Force Awakens, you know, and then Force Awakens, like, made more money than Jurassic World somehow. And so I guess, yeah, there's nothing that's going to beat Star Wars except for maybe Marvel these days. Even a Jurassic World sequel, which... You know, I think that Jurassic World may have been... There's nothing about that movie that suggests a ongoing success rate. You know, I feel like that was such a flash in the pan because people missed that franchise, and it was just something about it sparked. I just don't... Do you see Fallen Kingdom performing similarly?
Yeah, I do.
Really?
I think it's just, yeah, I think it's so big and loud and like obnoxious.
But it's like less—it's less kid friendly. It's like clearly darker. I don't know. Like I feel like
I
the novelty of
the
first one is worn off.
If the Transformers movies can keep making you know $1 billion, then so can this, I guess. But I think the Incredibles 2 could make a lot of money. You know, I think there's potential for that to happen.
I feel like Incredibles 2, yeah, it has the possibility of that Batman Begins to Dark Knight thing where it's like everybody's been watching that movie on DVD since the first one came out. And of course,
right.
In this case, like, you know, people that are getting married and having kids, like, were born when the first movie came out and watched it when they were little. So you've got the Jurassic World kind of, like, nostalgia built in. Plus, you've got Pixar. Plus, you've got... We're all so familiar with that first movie. Plus, the first one came out when superhero movies weren't as popular. And now people will see anything with superheroes in it. They'll go see R-rated movies with superheroes in them. So,
do you remember that George Lucas video where he was at like the Jurassic World premiere or something when like the executive was like, "Hey, check out how much money our movie made," or something. We're like, we'll see if Star Wars makes that much or something. And the dude kind of walked off, and George Lucas was like, "We're going to squash you like a bug." And he was right. He was right. It was like, I was blown away by how much Jurassic World made. Like, I was shocked by that first weekend that it was just like, holy crap. Like, it's the biggest movie ever suddenly. And I didn't see it coming. And then it just kept going and going and going, and then Force Awakens comes and just, like, swatted it away.
Yeah. Well, Lucas called it. He called his – well, he didn't call his shot. He called Kathy's shot. Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, that's the thing with the Jurassic World, going back to that. I feel like the first one, a lot of the appeal of that is, again, the nostalgia, which you don't have with the second one. And then also, like, that one looked like you were going to go on vacation because it, like, takes place in the jungle and it's all bright and shiny. And I feel like it's a stupid thing to say, but I feel like that it kind of contributes a lot to movies that are super successful. Like, I think Avatar and Jurassic World are two movies that they look like travel brochures, so people go see them because it makes them feel happy. And Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom doesn't have that. It's dark and the paradise is on fire, you know, so... I just feel like that. I think that's going to cost it something, but I still think
what's going to make more.
Pick.
What?
What's going to make more between Solo and Jurassic World?
Jurassic World.
God, before we started talking about this, I would have said Jurassic World easily, but I think I've talked myself into Infinity War number one, Solo two, and then Fallen Kingdom three.
Hmm. Interesting.
And then Incredibles.
Yeah. Yeah, sounds good to me.
Yeah,
and then Hotel Artemis is going to save us.
Yeah, can't wait. That are the newest franchise.
All right, well, man. So are you looking forward to this summer?
Yeah, I think it looks pretty good. I think it looks like a lot of fun, and it's already good because Infinity War and Tully came out, and they were both good. So. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, and I've got a lot of stuff circled. I feel like it's more encouraging than maybe last year. I can't remember any of the big titles from last year or the year before even. I think summer 2015 was a lot of fun, and the last two were okay. So, yeah, I think that this one is pretty encouraging. And you don't have a ton of original stuff, but I feel like kind of coming close. You know, Incredibles 2 is, like, so old. It's something so... It's been so long that it feels newish, you know? And Mission Impossible always feels fresh. And, yeah, I just feel like there are a lot of sequels, but they feel like at least departures kind of from the originals. It doesn't seem like there's any carbon copies coming out.
All right, well, They Live is on mute in my house right now, so I've got to go either kick ass or chew bubblegum.
Yeah, you know what to do.
For Film Nerds Unlimited, go to filmnerds.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you like what you hear, rate and review our podcast on iTunes. Keep an eye out for the next issue of Film Nerds Unlimited, coming soon.